Almighty God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, we ask your blessing upon today's discussion. Please give us peace, God. Give us understanding. Give us wisdom. And may we see and comprehend what you do, why you do it, that we will always remember. We ask for this in the name of your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen. As you notice on my little board here, I have, of course, big bright letters. It says Hanukkah on it. And you can read the big black letters beneath it. What do they say? Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Hannah, Elizabeth, and Miriam. Now, of course, note there's a few dot, dot, dots, because there's a number of women I'm not going to be discussing today. But all these women have something uniquely in common with each other. We're going to discuss what that is in a few minutes, as we go along. I asked my wife last night, I was having difficulties of what I want to talk about Hanukkah and how I wanted to present it. So I asked her, all right, what is it you'd like to know? Is there something that you don't know about Hanukkah that you'd like to find out about? Something I can talk about or discuss? And she said, well, when I first met you, you weren't celebrating Hanukkah. That's true. I forgot how many years ago it was. It was a while ago. That's right, I wasn't. She says, but now we do. Why? That's true. And I can't speak for each and every one of us in this room. Not if my life depended on it, I'd probably get in trouble. But I can speak for myself. So today, as I was writing my notes down last night, I'm going to tell you as best of my ability as to why I celebrate Hanukkah. Hopefully, have an interesting discussion in the process. First of all of us have a general idea of what Hanukkah is, right? We know it is a remembrance of an event or series of events that occurred during the Maccabean period. This is a couple hundred years, about 130 some odd years or so before Messiah was born. As far as the Judas Mattathias family came over, they were all from the Levitical line. They were high priests. They came along and encouraged all of Israel at the time, which they were being occupied by various countries back and forth and back and forth and being slaughtered by the thousands, to fight back. We know that's the basic story. Now, of course, happens after a few years of this fighting back and forth, they regain control over Jerusalem. It took a long time, but they did so. And, of course, they wind up reestablishing the temple sacrifices. They celebrated an 8-day period known as Hanukkah today because they were unable to get the temple clean enough for Sukkot 2 or 3 months earlier. They're also busy fighting, so kind of busy at the time. So Hanukkah became a late Sukkot, a couple months late. That was the objective. That's how they did it. They, of course, then sent out notice, tells everybody, hey, from this point forward, as remembrance of what God did for us and reestablished his temple, let's all celebrate Hanukkah from this day until all eternity. Hence, we have Hanukkah. It is a rededication. The rededication of the temple. That's all really simple. In a nutshell, it's what it is. Hanukkah, of course, is mentioned not by name, per se, but is mentioned in reference. In the Tanakh, Haggai talks about it, chapter 2, being the 25th day of Kislev, of how an important event this day is going to be. Before Hanukkah existed, of course. Daniel, of course, refers to the Maccabees as they fought back and said, hey, there'll be a reference, chapter 11 discusses a reference, oh, there's going to be a resistance or a rebellion amongst the Jewish people, they will succeed for a short period of time and then they'll be crushed. Which is absolutely true, that's what happened. And of course, we know John discusses the fact that Messiah, as Rose pointed out, celebrated Hanukkah during his time. Are any of these reasons, or good reasons, to celebrate Hanukkah? And that was a question I asked myself. Do I celebrate Hanukkah because the Bible makes a reference to it? Do I celebrate Hanukkah because it is a historical event? Why do I care about this minor holiday? Compare it to Passover, for example. I can tell you lots of stuff about Passover historically. The Exodus, Moses, what they did. We can read the Torah quite happily. Even there's even some extra references to it in other sources outside the Bible. We can talk about Passover prophetically, what the Messiah was going to do and ended up doing. The references that he would be saving the people, bringing them up out of Egypt, making them clean again. We can talk about that. It's a prophetic thing that Messiah wound up fulfilling. We can even talk about things that are still yet to be fulfilled in a form of Passover. We have the great Exodus that's supposed to outshine or be grander than the original one that we're still all waiting and anticipating for. Those are all really interesting things to talk about. They're very prophetic. Very things we look forward to on our own future, which is great. You can do the same thing for Shavuot, for the pouring out of God's Spirit, both past and our near, hopefully near, future. We can discuss a trumpet the same way, what it once was, what it will be in our future, atonement, Sukkot. Can you do the same thing to Hanukkah?
Is it possible that Christ was conceived at Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights?
We're going to discuss that. Hanukkah has its unique characteristic, and though it is much like Purim, mentioned in the Bible, it is just like Purim, the only holy day or holiday, not a holiday, that both starts and finishes inside the Bible. Meaning the prophecy to it, before it happens, the occurrence, and then there's no known reference to it again. For example, as Rose pointed out, Messiah's birth. You can have prophecies leading up to his birth. Or sorry, conception, not birth. I apologize. Messiah's conception. Prophecy leading up to his conception, his actual conception, and then he's going to be conceived again? No, he's not. It starts beforehand. The event occurs, and then it's done. Any of the other holy days, can you say the same thing? Of course not. The other holy days are shadows of things to come. Purim, you can say that of. There was a prophecy of sorts beginning, granted it's in the book of Esther. The actual event itself happens. And is there a future reference to Purim? There's conceptual ideas of Purim, but not actually a reference to it. That it's going to repeat itself in the same fashion or same manner. Granted, Purim is slightly different in that it does have some indication of a future, not quite like Purim, but the book of Esther as far as recurring itself. Not quite like the same as it did then, but similar. Hanukkah doesn't have that kind of future foundation. So it's not a look forward to event, it is a look past to event. Are we going to have another 4th of July? Meaning a revolution in the United States that breaks us free of the yoke of you know, King George or whatever. Technically not. Yes, Jeff.
One possibility could be the 4th temple that's
it's
prophesied
possible.
That will have to be dedicated at some point.
It is possible. It is possible. There might be some kind of a connection there. It's hard to say at that point. There isn't much of a Torah description or Tanakh description of Hanukkah as being associated with that, technically. But there is some other references which we're going to talk about today. And I'm hoping to get to. So as you notice, I have these various women's names written up here. I mentioned a few minutes ago. What do they all have in common? Any volunteers?
Yeshua.
Oh, hands up. Go ahead.
They all have the letter A in the name.
All have the letter A? That's right, they do. Yes, Pat.
They all had children that were prophetic as far as the nature of their conception and what they would be.
Very true. Carrie?
I don't think we necessarily knew this about Mary at the time, but everybody else was barren. They were known to not be able to have children.
Right. I want to focus a little bit about those last two statements, both Pat and Carrie. But as I mentioned before, this is I'm going to discuss today as to why I celebrate Hanukkah. I won't tell you why you should or shouldn't, just why I do. And those references of what Pat and Carrie just pointed out, those are my reasons. It's because of these women that are written up here. They're the reason I celebrate Hanukkah. Let's discuss them for a few minutes. Sarah. What do we know about Sarah? Carrie pointed out, she was barren. She's very old. When God promised her a child, was she not? She technically, for all intents and purposes, couldn't have children. For whatever reason, couldn't have children. Go to Genesis chapter 18. We'll start out in verse 9. Excuse me. Now, by the way, this is the angels come to Abraham and they're giving them promise of a future son. Excuse me. Then they said to him, referring to Abraham, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "Here in the tent." And he said, "I will certainly return to you accordingly in the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." And Sarah was listening in the tent door, which was behind him. Though Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I surely bear a child since I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life. Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied it, saying, "I didn't laugh." But she was afraid. She said, "No, but you did laugh." Place yourselves in Sarah's shoes for a minute. Not the fear of lying to God. Don't focus on that. Focus on what she focused on. The idea of having a child. That caught her off guard. That's not the only time, the only thing she says about it. In Genesis chapter 21, she says even more. 21, starting in verse 1. "And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. Then Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, 'God has made me laugh, so that all who hear will laugh with me.' She also said, 'Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children?'" What emotions are going through Sarah? Place yourselves in her shoes. What is she feeling? Joy, awe, surprise. What was that? Vindication, pleasure. She even used the own words herself. Laughter. God established something with her that she thought was impossible, that couldn't happen, that she resigned to the fact it couldn't happen. Yet God made it happen. What does she have in common with Rebecca? Rebecca. Same family. They're both barren. God made something impossible happen with Rebecca too. Genesis 25. Starting in verse 19. This is the genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Syrian. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife, because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If all is well with me, why am I this way?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger." What was Rebekah thinking? What was she feeling? Place yourself, those of you who have had children, place yourselves in her shoes. Cannot have children. She's barren at this point. Incapable of doing so. When she does, believe something is seriously wrong with her. And those words comfort her. What's she feeling? I want you to focus on what she's feeling. That's what I'm asking you. I want you to focus on what all of these women are feeling. Because what they're feeling is the whole reason why I celebrate Hanukkah. That's the only reason I celebrate Hanukkah, is because of what these women are feeling, what's going through their minds. Overjoyed. Feared. Fearful. Apprehensive. Scared. Awe. What was she in awe of?
God used her
to bear his children. And the prophecy went with it. The nations went with it. She sees, she feels, God, look what you've done with me and to me. This is a profound moment in her life. So, just like with Sarah, God's word, a promise, came through Sarah. A promise, as he just comforted Rebecca with, is coming through her too. There is a sense of joy, a sense of elation, as well as fear. It's almost as if, which we're going to read what some of these other women had to say, they became wanted and needed and valuable, not only to their husbands, but to God as well. Genesis chapter 30. Starting in the first two verses, and we'll continue on later on in the chapter. Chapter 30, verse 1. Now when Rachel saw that she bore no children, born Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" What does Rachel feel right now? Worthless. Might as well be dead. There's no value to my life. What purpose is there? You have all the children you need through my sister and through handmaidens. You have no use of me. You don't consider me. I'm not needed. And then when she has a child, starting at verse 22 of the same chapter, then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." So she called his name Joseph and said, "The Lord has added to me another son." Of course, this was her first child she gave birth. The other son referred through her handmaiden. What is she feeling now? Well, as it points out, says God listened to her and removed her reproach, removed her worthlessness away. She now became valuable, needed, wanted, having purpose in her life. We're not going to read there on all of them, but Hannah. We've talked about Hannah many times here. Do you recall the story of Hannah? What was she? She was barren. She was the favored wife of her husband, but yet ridiculed, was of no value to anyone else, did not believe that God even cared about her. She would go to the temple every year and ask for a son, ask for a child. And every year she got the answer, no. When Hannah gave birth to Samuel, she had elation written all over her. This is in 1 Samuel. Chapter 2. Well, oh, that's a long chapter. We'll read all of it. Here, let's back up a little bit. Let's go to chapter 1, verse... I like Hannah. She's just a really smart lady. I have a hard time just checking, taking a chunk out of what she has to say. Let's just go to verse 2, chapter 2. It's the poignant. So 1 Samuel chapter 2. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord, for you are none. There is none besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth. The Lord is the God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty men are broken, and those who stumbled and girded with strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, and those who were hungry have ceased to hunger. Even the barren has borne 7, and she who has many children has become feeble. The Lord kills, makes alive, and brings down the grave and brings up. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and lifts up. He raised the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among the princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. The pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength no man shall prevail, and the adversaries of the Lord shall be broken in pieces. From heaven he will thunder against them, and the Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." This is a long prayer that Hannah gave, Hannah said. What sense of emotion or feeling do you get from Hannah's prayer? Purpose. The tables have turned. I went from being worthless to being the most valuable person I could ever imagine. That's what she's going through. Those are the emotions. Now, that's awfully similar to the same emotions that Rachel, Rebecca, and Sarah went through. The exact same emotions. I now have a reason to live. There are more women than this. I'm not going to cover all of them. That takes a long time. But these I wanted to focus in on. Because the same emotions go through Elizabeth. This is in the book of Luke. Chapter 1. Starting in verse 24. Yeah, 24 is more about her. The earlier chapter is more about Zacharias, her husband. First, Luke chapter 1, starting in verse 24. Well, 23, just because it's... At least it gives some background. "And so it was, as soon as the days of his service for Zacharias were completed, he departed to his own house. Now after those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and she hid herself 5 months. Thus the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked upon me to take away my reproach from among men." What's Elizabeth thinking? That sounds awfully similar to what Rachel said. I now have purpose. I now have a reason to live. I have value, but not only in my husband's eyes, but rather in God's eyes too. Yes, Ellie.
These women had no future.
You're right. They had no future. It gave them hope. It does. It is a beautiful story of hope. That this promise, which they were now experiencing through prophecies, through God's own words, they're experiencing, okay, if God has come down, just imagine yourself in their shoes, come down and told you something. It's not just to focus on what he said, but the fact that he chose you to say it to. That's a big deal. Why did he choose somebody more righteous, more valuable, more important? He didn't. He chose these women. And of course, Miriam shows up. Now, all these other women that I rattled off so far, all have one thing in common. But Miriam, as Carrie points out, didn't. They were barren. They could have no children. For whatever reason, whether it be age, whether it be barrenness, we don't know the details, just they could not have children. Well, the fun thing about God is he has a tendency to prophesy things in many different ways. Because place yourself two years, before Elizabeth gets pregnant, back in time. 2 years before she gets pregnant. You know her, maybe. Ask around, in your mind's eye, ask around all the scholars who were there, all the Torah, rabbis, everything else you can possibly find to get a hold of, and ask them, how's the Messiah going to be born? What answer are you going to get? Will any of them say Immaculate Conception? Say a young woman. What do they know about her? That's it. Some woman's going to give birth. Relatively young. That's all they know. Now, we can look back and say, well, wait a minute. God prophesied it'd be someone who shouldn't be able to or could not give birth. Look, the promise of Sarah, someone who couldn't give birth, gave birth. The promise of Rebecca, someone who couldn't give birth, gives birth. Rachel, couldn't give birth, gives birth. Clearly, there's a pattern God's trying to teach you through all of these women. It's somebody who couldn't give birth, then gives birth. Because God doesn't say, oh, you know, Genesis chapter 93, verse 1 says, she will be a virgin, and she will immaculately conceive. Well, it doesn't tell you that. God doesn't discuss things like that. That's for his knowledge, not yours. Yes, Ellie.
They're all impossible.
All impossible.
Every one of them is impossible. These women can't have kids. It's impossible. They can't.
Yeah, it's not possible. Yeah.
It's not possible.
Possible.
They're already old.
Yeah.
Not possible.
That's the commonality between these women and Miriam. Guess what happens if you don't have relations with a male and you're a female, although yes, modern technology can do a lot of odd things. We're not discussing that. 2,000 years ago, they didn't have the weird in vitro whatever. Cannot have children. It's impossible. It doesn't happen. That's the only prophecy that God was giving through all these women's lives. Not only, sorry, that's the main one I'm focusing on right now. They were all barren, couldn't have children, and God, through a promise, makes sure they all do. Miriam, of course, is included. We're not done just yet. Luke, chapter 1, of course, going over to verse 46. Now, we're going to discuss all the details of what Mary and her conversation with the angel are. That's for somebody else to talk about. Verse 46, and Mary said, my soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior. He has regarded the lowly state of his maidservant. And behold, henceforth, all generations will call me blessed. For he was mighty, has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And his mercy is on those who fear him. From generation to generation, he has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. And has put down the mighty from their thrones and exalted the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things. And the rich he has sent away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy. As he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham and to his seed forever. What was she thinking? What was she feeling? What does it tell her? Fit in? Same thing Hannah was. Tables have turned. Things have flipped around. What shouldn't happen, what couldn't happen, has now happened. And God has looked upon me to do it. That's what's going through their minds. It is a sense of pleasure, a sense of joy, a sense of fear, of honor, apprehension, all combined together, amazement. Is that not also a similar feeling that each of you women have received when you found out you were first pregnant? Assuming you want the child, your plan, whatever. It is a sense of, well, I can't explain it better than you could. But these women have explained at least the most details I can understand. That feeling, that emotion, those are the events that I focus on. Yes, Jeff.
It was interesting when you were going through the list of those other ones that there was a continual theme of, they kept saying, God has removed reproach from me.
Yes.
Yet the last one is that now she has the reproach of everybody.
That's true. Good point. Good point. She does. It does contrast a bit. He's absolutely right. That all of these could not have children. We pointed out, Miriam, we have absolutely no idea whether she could or couldn't beforehand. Clearly she had children afterwards, so suspect she probably wasn't barren at all to start with. But her tables flipped. Well, as I mentioned before, God doesn't say in Genesis chapter 99, her name's Mary, she's going to have, an immaculate conceived child, and this will be, my son, and it'll be through me. Well, he doesn't give that kind of detail. If there was somebody else in the Torah or Tanakh at all that went through a similar scenario of Mary or Miriam, you would give a dead giveaway. Oh, look, somebody else had immaculately conceived way back here, happened a whole bunch of times. Oh, okay, this is just one more in a chain of events. Why wouldn't God just reveal that detail ahead of time? Why don't you just say, oh, should be immaculately conceived child? Because every woman, Tom, Dick, and Harry would say, hey, my child was immaculately conceived, trust me. But he's the new Messiah, everybody follow him. Well, if they know ahead of time, you try to cheat the system. That's just human beings, we do that. Call us what we will, but God made us that way. We have a tendency to desire our own versus his. Hanukkah is an event that is supposed to establish that. What I've written up there. To me, I look upon Hanukkah and I see, all right, there's a series of promises that God started out with through the years, through the generations, to never end. That promise, as I mentioned before, unlike the other holy days, they have future prophetic events that have yet to be fulfilled. Hanukkah doesn't really. There is not going to be an additionally new conceived child in the same fashion that Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Hannah were. Now, you could argue, well, yeah, but the theme or the idea of something coming about that is impossible reoccurs. Well, of course, God does that more than just in these women's lives. He does it all over the place. But this event is focused and culminates, to my mind, on Hanukkah. Yes, Ellie.
Also, although we have more facts of Sarah, some of Rebecca, a little less than Rachel, and maybe a little less than Hannah, and not much in Elizabeth, there isn't a lot said about each one of them, except the big issue is their child, their inability to bear, and that's the big issue. You don't hear anything about their family, about other kids, rarely. But the big issue is that barrenness. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to give many facts of the rest of their life.
That was the important thing God was trying to point out to us. It's the culminating event in all of their lives. Was Miriam changed from that point forward? You better believe she was. What about Sarah? Oh, yeah. That child, the ability to conceive, when it shouldn't be possible for you to conceive anymore, but talking to God and God saying, yes, it's going to happen, whether you like it or not. And they're elated. Beyond words, they're elated. Hanukkah, to me, is a celebration of that event. Celebration of what these women went through. The promise that God continued on and said, I will do this. I am not looking forward to another Hanukkah in the future. I don't believe that he has any purpose to do that again. Not through a Messiah, to deliver a Messiah through any kind of woman who couldn't give birth and now can. That doesn't have value to me. Now, I believe in other forms of Hanukkah, another fashion, and that a nation was born which shouldn't be born. Israel. It couldn't be born. That's impossible for a nation to be born 2,000 years later. But yet, it still happened. So the idea of this recurring theme still hangs around. God reuses it. That's just one example. There's others too. Yes, Jeff.
There's a could be also a hint of it in an old question. Can one be born again when he is old?
Very old question. Can one be born again? An impossibility. And yet, it can happen. It has to. So to answer a wise question, why do I celebrate Hanukkah? These women are why. Because God made a promise, and that culminates the event. This was it. Yes, I realize Messiah gets born 9 months later. That's fine. But the miracle wasn't in the process of his birth. Yeah, miracles happen, but that wasn't the main thrust of the miracle. The purpose was when God visited her. That was a miracle. When God visited each of these women, that was a miracle. So a miracle did happen there. And all of these women experienced it. Both physically, emotionally, mentally, every facet of their body experienced it. Whatever reason you choose to celebrate Hanukkah is your business. I won't tell you one way or the other. But at least now you know why I do.